Everybody, welcome to Willie's World. This is Willie. This is episode 29, entitled "The Deep State Unmasking the Unmaskers." I keep returning to the deep state because it's getting hot and heavy in the news, and things are coming out on an almost daily basis. So I'm sticking with it for now. By the way, that was Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters in the intro, asking the question, "Who are you?" which seemed appropriate to this topic. Anyway, a little background on the unmasking business. I'm going to read a little bit from a column in The Hill, July 30th, by a person named Cheryl, Sharryl Atkinson. Who's Cheryl Atkinson? Well, she's a five-time Emmy Award winner, recipient of the Edward R. Murrow Award. I did a broadcast on Edward R. Murrow for investigative reporting, and a source that I use because she's almost always right. She used to work for CBS, but she did too good a job on Benghazi, and they said, you're getting too good at this, and they got rid of her. Before that, they hacked her laptop. Anyway, here's some background information from courtesy of Cheryl Atkinson. Every day brings new stories about Russian interference in the 2016 election, whether Donald Trump played a role, and the alleged abuses by our intelligence agencies. One of the deepest, darkest, most important issues in the whole mess has to do with massive numbers of unmaskings of U.S. citizens. It potentially opens a can of worms squirmier than any other issues. To understand it, it helps to begin with the aftermath of the 9/11 terrorist attacks when U.S. intelligence agencies sought to expand their surveillance authority for what seemed like all the right reasons. For context, the week before 9/11, Robert Mueller had become FBI director. A month earlier, James Clapper had been named head of the agency that supplies image intel to the CIA. And John Brennan recently had become CIA deputy executive director. Wiretapping foreigners who could be terrorists isn't as sensitive an issue since our law doesn't give them the same protection as U.S. citizens. The problem comes when wiretaps include U.S. citizens in contact with foreign agents. That's called incidental collection, and it's not just phone calls. Today's wiretaps can include everything on the web, emails, bank accounts, photos, messaging, Facebook posts. And incidental collection can include anything picked up when a target is watched directly through a bug or by secretly activating his computer's microphone and camera. U.S. citizens who aren't accused of crimes are entitled to strong constitutional privacy protections. So to alleviate worries that citizens' rights might be violated through incidental spying on foreign targets, the intel agencies adopted strict rules. At first, they promised to destroy any incidental intelligence they collected. Later, they decided to store it for a short time, but promised that the names of U.S. citizens would be masked or hidden even internally. Then they argued that they needed to store the information on U.S. citizens a little longer, and might occasionally need to unmask or reveal their names. Still, unmasking was supposed to be extraordinarily rare, requiring a high-ranking official's approval accompanied by a strong legal argument that the citizen's name is crucial to addressing some national security threat. But several years ago, Intel insiders tell me the process was corrupted. Here's how. An official who is a bad actor may want to monitor a U.S. citizen, say a political enemy or a journalist, but knows he could never get wiretap approval from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, FISC. So he develops a pretext to wiretap a foreigner or a target in contact with that citizen. He then incidentally captures the citizen's information, too. Later, he builds a case for unmasking the U.S. citizen's name, supposedly for national security or other crucial reasons. Here's the best part. For the bad actors, the U.S. citizens are usually none the wiser. The surveillance isn't intended to build a criminal case. It's to collect dirt on political intel or blackmail material. So the corrupt process is never scrutinized in a U.S. court. Think of it as reverse engineering of intel. In 2016, very real questions were raised about whether reverse engineering of intel was widely deployed in an unethical manner. A red flag waved when we got a sense of how many Americans are incidentally surveilled. So many that near daily unmasking requests were said to be made in 2016 under the name of a single official, United Nations Ambassador Samantha Power. Who else was involved? When Acting Attorney General Sally Yates, National Security Advisor Susan Rice, and Director of National Intelligence Clapper said he requested unmasking of American names every couple of weeks. Apparently, it became so common that Clapper told Congress he probably made some requests on his way out the door before Trump's inauguration, but couldn't recall the specifics. Rice initially claimed she knew nothing about the unmasking of surveilled Trump associates. Later, she admitted on MSNBC that she had asked for names of U.S. citizens, previously masked in intelligence reports. Add to all this the report that during 2016, the Obama administration vastly expanded its searches for information about Americans in a National Security Agency database. In 2013, there were 9,500 searches involving 198 Americans. In 2016, that escalated to 30,355 searches of 5,288 Americans. Sure, it's possible that all that spying on U.S. citizens, all that those unmaskings were on the up and up. But what if my sources are correct in that at least some of these actions are not on the up and up? After all, our intel agencies have gotten caught in significant abuses despite FBI Director Christopher Wray incorrectly testifying to the contrary. In 2016, an inspector general found widespread abuse of key provisions designed to protect Americans. A Fisk judge found so many violations that he described them as institutional lack of candor and a very serious Fourth Amendment issue. One final note. Last October, Ambassador Power reportedly told congressional investigators that many of the hundreds of unmasking requests in her name in 2016 were not made by her. If true, it implies something equally problematic or worse. Someone else in the government used her name to unmask Americans. Okay, the first clip I have here is of Newt Gingrich, and this goes back about a year ago, and Newt Gingrich is waving the flag saying, we've got a pretty big deal here, and speculated about how many national security agencies and Justice Department officials are involved in this thing. This is a year ago. Notice how long it's taken to get us to where we are now. So here we go with Newt Gingrich.
Joining us now, New York Times best-selling author of Understanding Trump, former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. He also has a new online course called Defending America. I know it's long. I know it's drawn out. But everything I said is true. You're laughing.
Well, I'm just saying, look, the reason it has to be long is we have never, ever in American history had as many different scandalous behaviors by a president and his team as we are now learning from Barack Obama and his team. This is an amazing, excuse me, when I look at what Samantha Power was doing, by itself, that's unbelievable. Why does the UN ambassador have to unmask anybody? And my number one goal in this conversation is to get across that the House and the Senate have to open up serious, in-depth investigations. They need to bring Powers in under oath and go through every single unmasking. Why did you ask for this? What did you do with the information? What was the purpose of doing it? Who else knew about it? And then they got to do the same thing with Rice. And they got to do the same thing with the Attorney General Lynch. And they got to go right down the list. And ultimately, I think they're going to have to ask President Obama, did all of this occur and you didn't know it? Do you truly want us to believe that the IRS, the FBI, the Justice Department, the NSA, the State Department, the CIA, all of these were being used for illegal purposes and you as president didn't notice it? I think it's astonishing. I think you were exactly right to take this length of time to introduce it because it's amazing how the elite media is avoiding bringing the dots together and painting the picture, and they should be terrified. I mean, every reporter in the country should be frightened of the idea of the executive branch of this government, as powerful as it is, suddenly becoming lawless and deciding it's going to target individuals and go after people.
Mr. Speaker, it's 24/7. Everybody wants Paul Manafort indicted. It's like they want Paul, but they really want the president. For them, Paul Manafort is just collateral damage. Here's the issue that really bothers me. You're right about the Republicans. You're right, these investigations. They're not happening, though. The deputy attorney general didn't appoint a special counsel here. I don't know what the attorney general is doing, Jeff Sessions, but there is, to me, a sense of, okay, if we're going to go after Paul Manafort and you're going to go after a 30-year career military person like General Flynn, maybe you need to go after everybody else because the evidence against Hillary alone, sure. the questions about unmasking and surveillance leaks alone render a threat to the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, and I don't see it.
No, look, I'm with you. I don't. I mean, Attorney General Sessions did not recuse himself from any of the things we're now discussing. He could instruct the FBI to open up a case, but at the same time, I would say to the House and Senate, in both parties, by the way. I mean, when you start seeing the power of the FBI or the power of the CIA being suborned for political reasons, you know, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, you ought to be frightened about the future of freedom in America, because we build very powerful institutions to defend us from foreign enemies and to defend us from criminals. And if those institutions start being corrupted, we are in deep trouble as a country.
I've lost faith in all these institutions. Add the media to the list. Have you?
Yes. The truth is, we're one of the great crises in American history, and I think it's got to start. The one place you could imagine right this minute aggressively digging into this is the Congress. I cannot understand why the Republicans in the House and Senate are not being dramatically more aggressive. I mean, they're being handed story after story after story that prove that there was something really sick in the Obama administration. And just General Clapper, who I've known for years and I've respected for years, just his behavior over the last year is absolutely beyond me, and he ought to be brought back in, and they ought to go through step by step. And I noticed that he worded things very carefully. If you go back to the part you played.
Yes, he did.
Nobody in his particular institution, but I think that was, in effect, functionally not being honest.
This sounded very Clintonian. Mr. Speaker, we got a lot more to get to.
Up next, we have a report by Catherine Herridge, a contributor to Fox News, and a person who I found to be reliable and an accurate predictor of what was coming up in the future, going back more than a year ago. This is a report from about a year ago about Devin Nunes briefing the Director of National Intelligence, Coates, about the FISA warrant business and unmasking and all of that stuff. So here's Catherine Herridge a year ago.
Senate panel was told today the Russian lawyer at that 2016 Tower meeting, Trump Tower meeting, is directly tied to President Putin's government as new revelations come to light about the Obama administration's alleged targeting of the Trump transition team. Chief Intelligence Correspondent Catherine Herridge has an exclusive look at the sheer volume of the so-called unmasking requests during the presidential campaign.
In this letter obtained by Fox News, the Republican chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes, updates the nation's intelligence chief, DNI Dan Coats, on the status of the unmasking investigation. Three of the nation's intelligence agencies received subpoenas in May, explicitly naming three top officials of the Obama administration: former CIA Director John Brennan, former National Security Advisor Susan Rice, and former UN Ambassador Samantha Power. In what appears to be a reference to Power, Nunes writes, one official whose position had no apparent intelligence-related function made hundreds of unmasking requests during the final year of the Obama administration. The letter continues, Obama-era officials sought the identities of Trump transition officials within intelligence reports. However, there was no meaningful explanation offered by these officials as to why they needed or how they would use this U.S. person information. Where? During public testimony, an American who has done business in Russia claimed the lawyer at the 2016 Trump Tower meeting with Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, and Paul Manafort, among others, was directly tied to Moscow.
She's worked for the FSB. The FSB being the successor organization to the KGB.
Anti-corruption campaigner Bill Browder testified Natalia Veselnitskaya was Moscow's point of contact for repealing U.S. sanctions imposed after the alleged murder of Browder's lawyer. Russian President Putin retaliated, blocking adoptions to American parents, reportedly a subject of conversation at the 2016 meeting.
Nobody was talking about adoption. They were talking about the repeal of sanctions so that Russian torturers and murderers could freely travel and keep their money in America.
Browder said the Russian lawyer hired an American opposition research firm to smear him and plant false stories in the media. The same firm commissioned the unverified, salacious anti-Trump dossier.
In a statement to Fox, a lawyer for the firm Fusion GPS denied spreading false information about Browder and his lawyer, adding the president and his allies are trying to smear them because the firm investigated Mr. Trump's ties to Russia. On the unmasking allegations, a spokesman for Power said any actions she took were in the context of her National Security Council position advising President Obama, and Power has been unambiguous about the need for congressional Russia investigations. A spokeswoman for Rice said unmasking was done for intelligence, not political purposes, and there was no immediate response from Brennan. Brett.
Catherine Harris with exclusive reporting. Catherine, thank
you.
Up next is a report from Lou Dobshow, another person I found to be extremely reliable. And it's a shocking report that a lot of the information about the unmasking done by Susan Rice is going to be archived and stored and unavailable for a period of 5 years. Part of the mysterious Obama Library project, a library that apparently is not going to have any books. But anyway, this is kind of strange. I can't believe that the there isn't a way around this. But anyway, here's the archiving of material on Susan Rice by the Obama administration.
A shocking revelation to tell you about right now. Information regarding the unmasking of Trump campaign members by former Obama National Security Advisor Susan Rice is stored at the Obama Library and will be under lock and key for 5 years. This just coming to us right now, according to Judicial Watch, which had learned of the obstruction from a letter by the National Security Council. The president of Judicial Watch is livid about the development and says he hopes Special Counsel Robert Mueller will look into the matter. For more on all of it, I'm joined by Olympic Media Managing Editor and Editor of the Daily Caller, Katie Freitas, and radio talk show host on New York's WOR, Mark Simone. Good to have both of you here. Katie, I'll start with you. Your reaction to this. They wanted to figure out who wanted the unmasking done, and it turns out we won't know because that'll be in the Obama Library for the next 5 years. What do you think?
Well, right, and by the time we do get to figure out what's going on, you're right, it'll have been half a decade. So this is just another roadblock that gets in the way of figuring out the truth and figuring out what's really happening. So we'll see. It's just extremely unfortunate that we have to wait 5 years. And the question is, why do we have to wait so long? Why did this happen in the first place, and why can't we know now? Is there not some way we can figure this out?
Mark, isn't it important to understand the context of everything that's going on right now? Shouldn't we be able to get that information?
Absolutely. It's vital information. This is a very serious thing, this leaking, and President Obama should be absolutely pushed to issue a statement. It's in his building, his library, under his control, why he personally will not release this.
You know, the fear, of course, Katie, is that President Obama and his team were doing this for political reasons. In other words, they wanted to leave this trail. They wanted to basically expose Donald Trump and members of his administration to all that they're getting exposed to essentially right now. But by unmasking this, could we have not been able to then therefore see that play out? I mean, by hiding it, no one knows?
Well, that's the thing. No one knows. And for better or for worse, it is something that we need to shine a light on. I mean, you can already see these partisan attacks going on with what James Comey revealed about Loretta Lynch and Hillary Clinton and her pressuring them to lay off on her investigation. Things like this were happening all over, whether it was Clinton, whether it was former President Barack Obama. And we need to know what's going on. And 5 years is far, far too long to wait.
And there may be one other thing for this. If they had all that surveillance in the Trump campaign, they may be hiding it because it proves there was no collusion of any kind.
I'll tell you one thing, Mark. I mean, in politics, you always knew it was kind of seedy, right? Not a great business. But I'll tell you, some of this stuff is really bringing it out into the open in a way that I think is probably very challenging for this president. He's a guy who comes from the business world, right? And not only that, I've made this point before. He didn't have to answer to shareholders. He didn't have to answer to a board of directors. He answered to himself. In other words, he needed to be successful for himself, for his business, for his family. He goes in, becomes president of the United States. He wants us all to be successful. He wants the economy to succeed. And lo and behold, there are a lot of different factions that perhaps he didn't bargain on.
Yeah, you know, he's been a friend of mine for 25 years. I've watched him very closely get into some real scrapes, get into real roadblocks, have every level of government shut him down, but come back in 6 months and that building is there. In the end, he always gets it done, and you can be sure by the end of the year, early next year, he'll have everything on track.
What's it going to take to do that? I mean, Katie, what is it going to – how does he start to get some of these members of the swamp, shall we say, to start to play ball with him? Because right now it's just resistance, resistance, resistance.
Well, honestly, it's a butting of heads between both. I'm personally a proponent of Donald Trump not tweeting as much as he does, but there has to be respect on both sides. And unfortunately, a lot of the media, a lot of these insiders, a lot of the swamp don't respect him and don't want to see anything good happen to him. They don't respect him as president, and therefore they're not going to want to work with him in any capacity.
Up next, we have a report by John Roberts, a regular commentator on Fox News, going back over a year ago when it's first revealed that who was involved in the unmasking, one of the people involved anyway, and that was Susan Rice, National Security Advisor to Obama. She's not an elected official. She's just a consultant for President Obama, and yet she had this incredible power to spy on the Trump administration. Anyway, here's Susan Rice being revealed early on in the game over a year ago.
But we begin with Chief White House Correspondent John Roberts and a familiar name from the Obama administration surfacing in yet another scandal. Good evening, John.
James, good evening to you. 2 weeks ago, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee announced to the press and the president that he had uncovered a disturbing trend of intelligence collection on Trump officials, some of which was made public, others which were made known to administration officials. Today, we learn more about the how and the who of what's going on.
Multiple sources tell Fox News that President Obama's National Security Advisor Susan Rice was the one who requested the names of Trump officials be unmasked in intelligence reports that were collected during the campaign and transition. The White House, which has access to intelligence logs that allegedly show Rice was behind the unmasking, was playing coy today.
Does this White House look at what she allegedly requested as a national security issue or a political issue?
Well, I'm not going to, I mean, that's a nice backdoor into the line of questioning. I think until there's a finding of that, I don't want to start getting into the motives because we still haven't, again, me getting to the motives assumes certain things in fact that I don't think we're ready to go to yet.
Senator Rand Paul today described the revelation as, quote, a smoking gun in a tweet writing, smoking gun found. Obama pal and noted dissembler Susan Rice said to have been spying on Trump campaign. There is no suggestion that what Rice allegedly requested was illegal. As the president's point person on national security, she had the authority. But in a recent television appearance, she claimed no knowledge of it.
I know nothing about this. I was surprised to see reports from Chairman Nunes on that count today.
Rice has a checkered past when it comes to public statements. She had initially claimed the Benghazi attack was in response to a controversial video and praised Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, who faces a court-martial in May for desertion.
She served the United States with honor and distinction.
In its closing days, the Obama administration scrambled to preserve as much intelligence as it could about Russia and possible collusion with the Trump campaign. Former Obama administration official Evelyn Farkas appeared to acknowledge Trump officials had been the subject of surveillance.
And get as much intelligence as you can before President Obama leaves the administration, because I had a fear that somehow that information would disappear.
The extent of the unmasking became apparent when NSC intelligence director Ezra Cohen Watnick conducted a review of unmasking policy. Sources say he came across many instances where the names of Trump officials had been revealed. He brought that information to the White House counsel, who told him to suspend the review. Cohen Watnick was the subject of intense media coverage when he was mistakenly identified as one of House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes' sources. Today, the press secretary wondered why the Rice revelations weren't drawing the same attention.
I think that it is interesting the level of or the lack of interest that I've seen in these developments when it goes in one direction.
Well, this new information adds another layer of intrigue to everything that went on during the campaign. It still would seem to fall short of proving the president's original claim back on March the 4th that he was being, quote, wiretapped by President Obama. James?
And John, the...
One more tape coming up on Susan Rice. It's right after the day that she leaves office, actually a couple of minutes after she officially wasn't part of the government. And she dictates the now famous memo where she pretends to be talking to Obama, and Obama's telling everybody, let's make sure we do everything by the book. This is after she's out of the government, still on government equipment, however, and it's obviously a CYA memo, blatantly obvious.
It's getting good. Senate Judiciary Committee members are pressing Susan Rice to explain by next week a newly revealed email.
She's sending herself an email talking about a conversation on January the 5th with the president, reassuring herself and I guess the president that this would be done by the book. I think that's odd and disturbing because we know that the investigation regarding the Trump campaign was anything but by the book.
And the email also indicates the Obama administration may have withheld information on the Russia probe from the Trump team. Meanwhile, there's new information on Michael Flynn's guilty plea. Who better to explain it all than former federal prosecutor Andy McCarthy, who joins us from New York. All right, Andy, I've been dying to talk to you, but let's first hit Susan Rice, because right. It seems like she's back. I mean, she was there to save him on Benghazi, went out and lied about the deal with what caused the attack in Benghazi, and now she's back again with what certainly looks like a CYA email to herself.
Yeah, the question is, which A was she seeing, it appears. And, you know, there's two interesting things about it. One is this by-the-book stuff, which you would think at the very tail end of the administration that always did it by the book, it wouldn't be necessary to tell people that things needed to be done by the book, particularly when, as Senator Graham points out, this thing was anything but done by the book, unless the book is like Rules for Radicals, right? I guess they didn't identify the book. But the other interesting thing that you point to is this holding out, that they're laying the groundwork to hold out information. So President Obama wants to know over the next couple of weeks if there's any reason why we can't share with the incoming team. And, you know, you have to think about what was going on then. They were investigating Flynn at that time, and he is going to be Susan Rice's successor, who you would think she would be cooperating with and would be sharing information with. And yet they were regarding him as a criminal suspect. They were thinking about doing a Logan Act prosecution on him, which is absurd. They ultimately had the FBI go speak to him and ended up prosecuting him for false statements. So I wonder if they're laying the groundwork to not let him in on things because they're regarding him as a suspect rather than her successor.
And a friend of mine today reminded me of when we were in the Reagan administration and he was in there in the last few days, that usually in the last few days you're not still sending emails. And I don't know what time that email dropped. I don't know if it was it before 12 noon when... What's the timing of that?
They say 12:15, Laura, which is when she should have been clearing out her office, right?
And if she's sending... No, she was out. No. 12:15, she is gone. This is Trump land after 12 o'clock, right, Andy?
Right, but she's still using government email, and I think she still had her security clearance, but I think she's creating a government document on purpose. And we know that's not always the usual thing in the Obama administration. Often they tried to not create government documents when they were doing government work. But she clearly was making a paper trail here.
Andy, also, I want to ask you quickly about this deal with Robert Porter and this whole thing with his, you know, ex-wives and accused of abuse and the timeline that looks like it might be different from what the administration initially said, given what...
The last loop is a recording from CPAC in February of 2018, Conservative Political Action Committee, and it's being conducted by Andy McCarthy, a former federal prosecutor who became famous when he prosecuted successfully the blind sheik in Manhattan. And he talks to a panel of reporters that have been working on this story for at least a year at this point in time. It's February of 2018. And seemed like a lot of excitement back then, but then from February till now, at least for the unmasking part, it just kind of got buried under other stuff. So here's how the state of it in February of 2018, and thanks to Cheryl Atkinson, I think we've lit up the investigation again. Here we go.
So good afternoon, everyone. We're short on time, so we're going to dive right in. We've been dealing with two collusion narratives for the last 18 months or so. There's the famous one, the dastardly Trump-Russia collusion enterprise. And then there is a second one that hasn't gotten quite as much attention, and we're going to try to fix that this afternoon, which I would describe as the degree to which the Obama administration put the law enforcement and intelligence arms and apparatus of the government first in the service of the Clinton campaign, and then failing that, to basically derail the president at the beginning of his administration. So the question, I guess, to start out with is, after 18 months, which collusion narrative do we think has more factual support? And why don't we start, Sarah, what do you think?
Oh, well, certainly after the last 18 months, the research, thank you, and the investigative work that we've been doing, what we've uncovered is such a heavy connection between, well, let's look at the dossier, for example. It was paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign and the DNC. That was unearthed and uncovered. If you look back to the unmaskings, and what we have now discovered and what some intelligence sources have described, the weaponization of our intelligence apparatus for political purposes, that still needs to be thoroughly investigated. But we saw the increase in unmaskings was exponential during the 2016, the year of 2016, the last year of President Obama's office.
So let's just to be clear, so we know what we're talking about on unmasking, what we mean is that the government collects this intelligence mainly through FISA programs, right? Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. They do surveillance on individuals, and they have bulk collection programs. That information gets refined into intelligence reporting. And when American citizens are identified because they've been incidentally collected,
correct,
their names are concealed.
That is absolutely correct. So their names are concealed. So then there has to be a request made to actually unmask the name, particularly if they're a civilian. If you're in the government, however, it may be that you're referred to as NSA 1 or American Politician 1, or they would give some kind of reference. So it would be easier to discern who you are if you're a government official. But the actual unmasking is the exposure of that American. And this is a very, very unusual process. It's not something that was done frequently prior to this, but the laws changed under President Obama, and that became more and more rampant, and especially during the last year. But back to your question, absolutely, the evidence is substantial on the part of, for me, at least for my research and the work that I've done and everything I've seen, is that the collusion narrative between Trump and Russia, we haven't seen any evidence of that. Neither Congress has been able to provide that. No, neither law enforcement has been able to provide that. But what we have is a number of instances where we've seen collusion between the Hillary Clinton camp, some members of the Democratic lawmakers, as well as the FBI and members of the intelligence apparatus that appear to have been colluding against the president, and then before the election, when he was a candidate, and then after the election as an insurance policy.
Okay. Byron, the Trump-Russia investigation is really kind of a traditional investigation, the way it's being conducted now, in the sense that you have prosecutors looking into it, they have subpoena power, they have other ways of collecting information. The sort of investigation of the investigators is very different, and it's being mainly conducted by congressional committees, with the limitations that that implies. Why is it so hard, do you think, in particularly now that we're in a Republican administration and we have Republican congressional committees, to get to the bottom of things that mainly happened during a Democratic administration?
Well, this has driven some Republican investigators on Capitol Hill crazy because they think, wait a minute, we're on the same team. The Republican Trump appointees are running the Justice Department, they're running the FBI, then, of course, they should cooperate with us. And they're finding that it's just not the same, that there are bureaucratic imperatives that guide people at the Justice Department, regardless of who appointed them, and it's really difficult to get information. What you were talking about is basically you have three investigations going on Capitol Hill. You have the big mainstream bipartisan investigation with the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is doing the kind of classic investigation that you're seeing on CNN and MSNBC. Basically, you're seeing a very Trump-centered, sort of Russian-centered investigation. Then you have Devin Nunes, who you're going to hear from in a little bit, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee has taken a different tack. He's actually has looked at a number of contacts or Russia issues, but he's also done a lot of work on the dossier and what the Obama administration, the late Obama administration, did when they got the shock of their lives, which is the victory of Donald Trump. And the last one, that don't forget, that's made some noise also is the Senate Judiciary Committee run by Charles Grassley. It's a slightly more bipartisan effort than the House investigation, which is not bipartisan at all. Grassley and Dianne Feinstein, the ranking Democrat, have done some things together, but anytime it gets really interesting, they split up. Right. And we have seen Grassley put out some very interesting information.
Yeah, in fact, Grassley, in combination, I think, with Lindsey Graham, who runs one of the subcommittees on the Judiciary Committee, actually put out a letter about Christopher Steele,
yep.
Who is the British spy who is responsible mainly for the Steele dossier that we now know is commissioned by the Clinton campaign. And I thought the interesting thing about that was, for all the hullabaloo over the Nunes memo, the Grassley-Graham letter actually corroborated the most important things that were in that memo.
And it was completely independent. And Grassley's investigators came to this differently than Nunes' investigators did, and yet they came to the same conclusion.
Yeah. Chuck, what about the sort of deep state aspect of this? We know that to pry information, and this is the thing that I'm sure everybody finds the most frustrating. Again, we have a Republican administration, Republican-controlled committees, and they're trying to get information. And basically what Nunes essentially had to do was threaten them with contempt
right.
in order to pry some of the most important information out.
Right, yeah. It's been an interesting saga to watch unfold. Over the past, the dossier came out a little over a year ago, and it's pretty clear that the dossier is a significant part of the counterintelligence criminal investigation into possible collusion. And it's taken several months, starting last summer, before the Justice Department and FBI even started providing any sorts of documents to Nunes' committee. And it's kind of funny because Republicans on the Hill, Chuck Grassley and Nunes in particular, have really, they're asking questions that will provide more information. They are, I believe, on the side of transparency in all of this. They're asking questions about the dossier that could potentially, it's hard to portray them as being partisan on that right. on that issue, because the questions they are asking could very well corroborate the dossier. But I mean, there's, as Sarah said, we've seen no evidence at all to corroborate collusion. So the DOJ and FBI is pretty clear, it has stonewalled on a lot of these document productions. December is when they really started producing these documents, and then now the memos came out. We're finally realizing how they obtained the spy warrant on Carter Page, the campaign, and everything.
And there was actually, I just want to go right off of what Chuck said right here. There was actually such a big struggle, and I remember this clearly because I reported it on Fox when it happened that night, that they were threatening to subpoena, the DOJ. It was like either you turn over these documents or you're going to be in contempt. We're going to find you in contempt. And when that struggle came about, I mean, boy, there were phone calls being made that night, back and forth, chatter. Finally, the DOJ relented. They gave in. They turned over the documentation. And remember, Chairman Nunez was actually almost like, I call it congressional arrest. He was almost like in a congressional prison for 8 months. They wouldn't let him work on this. They wouldn't let him focus on this. Now we've got Senator Grassley. And I think, Andy, Senator Grassley's right over the target with this criminal referral memo and exposure of what happened there with Christopher Steele and all those connections. So this was a big fight to get to the truth.
Now, on the issue of collusion.
So here we are in August, and well, thanks to Cheryl Atkinson, it's somebody's paying attention to the unmasking subset of the larger scandal. And here's how she concludes her article in the Hill. The good news would seem to be that there's documentary evidence of all of this stuff, if anyone wants to discover it. There are names of who requested what and when, information as to where unmasked intel was sent, names of those who searched the NSA database and under what auspices. Unlike a lot of facets of the Trump-Russia intel controversy, this trail should be easily traceable. Yeah, well, it should be, except somebody has to be willing to do it, and they have to do it without the cooperation of the Department of Justice and the FBI and the intelligence community, because they're all implicated in it. You know, I just had an idea, and that was to, for whatever reason, Russians turn out the best computer programmers, partly because they have to work with extremely limited resources and have to learn to work efficiently and develop a great deal of expertise through adversity. And so let's see, congressional investigators should hire some of these Russian hackers to get what the Department of Justice and the FBI won't give them. Wouldn't that be kind of ironical if the Russian hackers that we hired uncovered the real Russia scandal? Stay tuned, it's all just getting warmed up. I'll leave you with the theme song of the DNC. What a Fool Believes He Sees by the Doobie Brothers and the amazing voice of Michael McDonald. Enjoy. We'll be right back.
sleep.